I'm David S. Dawson from The Intellectual Podcast, a show that spotlights creatives from all walks of life, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other incredibly geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, where once again we're forgetting the whole video game thing because I like talking to creators about their cool stuff, and this time we're talking to, maybe in this instance, more of a creator curator. I like what I did there. Steve Fox, one of the creators of the Razor Blades horror magazine, and I'm just really excited for this. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. It's nice temperate weather for late December in New York. So just sitting here sweating and thinking about climate change and enjoying my Sunday. Or Monday? What day is it?
I have been off work since Christmas Eve, and I don't have to go back until after New Year's, so I have no idea.
Maybe that's a telling answer about how I'm actually doing it. I don't know which day of the week it is.
I just know that my wife hasn't told me I have to take a shower because we have to go anywhere yet.
But yes, I'm doing well, chronal discrepancies aside.
Well, I'm just glad we didn't have to worry about time zones on this one too, because that just would have been everything all in one shot. So we're not here to talk about weird time things. We're here to talk about Razor Blades, a wonderful horror anthology magazine that you have created, not by yourself, but, you know, with a wonderful little business partner going there. I'm sure you've told the story 1,000 times, but what is the little elevator pitch for Razor Blades?
Yeah, well, my very unknown, obscure friend, James Tynan, who folks might know from books like Batman or Something is Killing the Children, he and I were working together since mid-2019 on Department of Truth, the Image Comics series that he launched this year with Martin Simmons and Aditya Abidikar. So I'm the editor on Department of Truth, and earlier this year, while everything shut down because of COVID, and not long after Diamond Comics stopped distributing books for, I guess it ended up being about 3 months, we found ourselves in the position of not downtime exactly. He was working ahead on his books, I was working ahead on my projects, but a lot of our friends and peers suddenly found themselves without immediate work. Some publishers had to put a pause on things, and some publishers had to cancel things entirely. And from that, he and I had the idea to do this horror anthology and to try to put it out while everything was on pause. And it came about, you know, that's like the noble explanation of it, but it was really a happy accident because one of James's pastimes this year has been ordering old comic books on eBay. And he ordered a full run of Taboo, which was Steve Bissett's horror anthology from the late 80s, early 90s. And they arrived while we were texting about Department of Truth and about other stuff. And he sent me a photo, and I was cleaning out my bookshelves, and I grabbed a couple of my Taboo copies, and I sent him a photo back. And we just started doing a hypothetical of like, oh man, I wish there was a horror anthology like this today. Yeah, it's cool. We could do X, Y, and Z. Yeah, we'd invite, you know, this person and that person. And then we just ended up actually doing it. And we didn't go the Kickstarter route because, you know, we wanted to put it out as soon as we possibly could. I think we came up with it, I guess, in March or April. And we wanted to put it out that summer while everything was still shut down because of COVID, and kind of draw attention to a bunch of people we think are talented at a moment when other comic things were on pause. And then, of course, by the time we actually got the first issue out, things were shipping again, which is, you know, a net good for everybody. But we ended up coming up with a project that takes up hours in the day that neither he nor I have, but that's what getting rid of sleep is for.
I mean, really, I think that's what podcasting is all about, too. just coming up with way too many ideas.
Yeah, I mean, all of the comics fear is like, what can I add to my plate that will not make money or advance my career, but will be fun and keep me from resting? And that's how we all make our decisions.
I mean, I feel like part of the decision, too, for starting up a new project seems to be, I want an excuse to work with this person. How do I trick them into doing that?
110%. And James and I both... So James and I have features in every issue of Razor Blades, and the rest of the creative cast rotates. But it's been very much a, like, let's go down our wish list of collaborators, and let's go down our wish list of people we think make really cool art or tell really cool stories, and find a place to put them all together.
And that was one thing I really liked looking through. First thing I did when I got the digital copies here was just completely scan through the list of the creators you had in here. And I really liked that there were people I knew, people I didn't know, people who I recognized the name, but I couldn't have told you anything else about them besides that I recognized the name.
Yeah, the thing about... So when we say we were inspired by Taboo, one thing we never wanted to do was put together like a nostalgic horror anthology. I love stuff, you know, I love the Crypt Keeper kind of vibe, but it just feels like that gets trotted out every couple of years and it doesn't feel necessarily that new to people. So we did want to do something very contemporary, but one thing we really took from Taboo was that Bissette got all these different types of creators together. There were people who were very established, Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman, you know, they were writing high at that period in time. And then there were folks who came from more indie backgrounds, and he put them all in one spot. So that's what we've tried to do with Razor Blades, where, yeah, we have people who, you know, work at DC alongside James, and we also have people who do independent comics, have never touched a cape character before. We have horror illustrators who have almost no published print work, but have huge followings online from doing these really terrifying horror illustrations, and putting them all in the same spot. And it's been cool to see it cross-germinate already. Like, we had Trevor Henderson do our first cover, and Trevor has a huge following online. He created a character called Siren Head. He's created other, you know, terrifying creatures. And he did our first cover, and he's doing features in every issue going forward. And then Zach Thompson got him to do a cover for I Breathe the Body. And then we got him to do a cover for Department of Truth. Dave Romero, another horror illustrator, we had him do a Department of Truth cover. So kind of like bringing these different types of creators together under one roof to, like you said, you know, you get in because you know a couple names, and then you find other people there, and you follow those folks to their natural environments.
So what's it like for you trying to curate everything versus creating your own stuff?
It, you know, I think James and I have like a perpetual apology to our personal collaborators because, yeah, 90% of it is like, okay, I need to assemble these 80 pages and I know I'm going to do this script, but, you know, I've got it in my head already, so I'll get to it. And, you know, unfortunately, your own thing ends up being the thing you kick down the line because you're trying to corral all these other creators who are working across the globe. You know, we have people contributing from every continent except for Antarctica. So yeah, apologies to the people James and I personally work with in Razor Blades who do the art for our stories at the last minute. But the biggest thing about curating it is we could easily go twice as long. Like every issue, it's not a matter of finding people to fill out 80 pages. It's how do we make the tough calls of who we actually want to invite to participate? Because, you know, he and I could sit down this week and plan out the first 15 issues with willing contributors. But our plan right now is just for 5. So we have to figure out if we only ever get to do these 5 issues, who do we want in here? What order do we want them in? And how do we make this the most attractive package possible?
Well, I'm glad that it's up to 5 because the last I had seen anything, you guys had said you were guaranteeing readers 4.
Yeah, so we launched with 1. And I think we've learned a lot of lessons with 1 and 2. Our plan was always to do a full year. And the thing about working with James, and this is true for Department of Truth, it's true for Razor Blades, is James is really fantastic about coming up with the next crazy escalation of something. I think we work well together because I can be the cloud on his parade at times, but the synthesis of that is like a really cool attainable level of something. Like James is always thinking like, okay, what if we did this? What if we did this? What if we did this? And then I remind him that, you know, he will die if he tries to do all of these things at the same time. And we figure out how to balance that out. But Razor Blades, the plan is, the guaranteed plan is 5 issues. So we did the one already. The second one is shipping now. The third one is coming out in January and then April and July. So it'll be a July to July project. And we have had some very cool talks about what would come next. Nothing that we can say yet. I don't think it'll look like it did for this first year, because the two of us learning self-publishing for the first time, it is a massive amount of work. And when you add in the fact that I do a dozen other things and James does, you know, 5 dozen other things, it wouldn't be sustainable to keep doing Razor Blades in the current form. But each issue is getting easier to put together, knock on wood. The first issue, we had the benefit of no one knew it was coming because we did the Beyonce release, as I like to say, where we didn't announce it at all until it was on sale. The second issue proved to be really challenging because we had already set October. We wanted to launch before Halloween, take advantage of the spooky season. So we had from July to October to put that together, which sounds like a lot of time until you remember that everyone who's doing something for Razor Blades is also doing, you know, an ample amount of other projects at the same time. So now we're able to build a little more lead time. So we have things turned in now that won't get published until next July's issue. And that gives us time to kind of plan out and pick our battles on the scheduling front.
So why did y'all decide to go self-publishing versus going through an already established publisher?
Well, you know, James said it early, is just not, we didn't want to ask for permission. And we immediately had offers. I will say, like, once the first issue is out, a couple different very cool publishers reached out and said that they would love to be the traditional home for something like this, and that James and I could retain pretty much full control. But you always give something up when you partner with someone. You get a lot in exchange. Obviously, it would be nice to not have to handle printing and distribution on our own. But we just didn't want to ask for permission. If we wanted to do X, Y, and Z, we wanted to be able to decide among the two of us if that's what we want to do and not have to ask anyone else, clear it with anyone else, end up having limitations or people, you know, that we can't involve for whatever reason. And we just didn't want to wait. You know, we wanted to take advantage of that COVID window, which, you know, last spring we thought was going to be a lot smaller than it is. But we knew that if we came up with a project in March or April, no matter how excited we could get a publisher about it, there's no way it was going to be out by July.
It makes perfect sense to me. And I'm not even going to try to guess who any of those people were, because I've been oddly good at guessing things lately. Now I'm going to have to cut that out later.
Yeah, you'd have to believe that. Because like I said, you know, they're fantastic publishers. And in other scenarios, you know, he and I would have leapt at it. But we're in the lucky position that, you know, James has such a platform and he's able to tell the kind of stories he wants to tell. And I've been able to get some very cool opportunities throughout 2020 and coming out in 2021. So it just didn't feel like we had to go that route. And so we wanted to keep this as something that he and I have full control over.
Which I really appreciate. I went through, I way too quickly read all of the comics things. apologies to the people who just wrote stories. I completely skipped your stuff because of time. I'm going to go back and do it, I promise. But, I mean, just the flow of story to story here that you guys had throughout both issues, I thought was really good. They all had a really nice little twist to them going in there. And I mean, I just think y'all did a really good job putting it together in basically every way possible.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, so much of the credit goes to our contributors, because when we solicit a story for Razor Blades, we have a couple don'ts, but we don't have a lot of do's. Like, the do's are really up to the creators. The don'ts are, like I said, we're not looking for a very nostalgic anthology. We don't really want to see, like, vampires and werewolves and mummies unless you have such a compellingly different take. And we just want to see people go, like, full tilt horror. So not a lot of hard sci-fi or fantasy. Obviously, you know, Zach Thompson and Jen Hickman, their story in the second issue is pretty fantastical, but it still has that horror core to it. So it's a happy surprise to us in some ways. It's like a science experiment each time we solicit a story, because we know with who we're approaching that we're going to get something good. We don't always know what that good is going to be.
So just from looking up who some of these people were that I didn't know who they are, it seems to me like y'all are basically only using stories from people that you're going after, which is fine because you know tons of people. But do you see yourself, well, first off, am I right about that? And secondly, do you see yourselves getting to a point where somebody like me could try to get something in there?
You know, you're like 80% right about that, because we are curating, and that involves inviting people to participate. But James and I knew from the outset, he and I may have a pretty wide view of horror comics and horror art and literature right now, but we don't have all-seeing eyes. So some of our contributors have come from recommendations where, you know, Trevor Henderson says, oh, you know, you should check out these illustrators, or Jenna Cha says, you should check out these creators. So we've had people contribute, not because James and I sought them out directly, but because a creator we trust vouched for them and pointed us in their direction. And especially on the horror illustration front, so many of the artists that we found and asked to contribute covers and single page illustrations have come from seeing who people we already like retweet and interact with online, and kind of following that thread farther and farther away from what James and I already know about. And also Sam Johns, James's partner, has recommended people that we've ended up using. So it's been a great way to kind of expand our own horizons and find new people that he and I are excited about. As far as like fully open submissions, we just didn't have the capacity to do that for the first year. But fingers crossed, as we figure out what's the future for Razor Blades, we will be able to take on more and more talents that don't necessarily come firsthand from me and James.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, not for me, because this is not the kind of thing I can write well enough to pull off, but I know people that I could push that toward when y'all get that far in the process.
Yeah, and you know, never say never, because I think that we have people in here. So yes, a lot of the people we approach because they already do horror, and we want people who are already passionate about this. But we also have some people who've contributed who don't necessarily have published horror work, but based on what they have done, we really wanted to see what they would do in that environment. And that's been a fun surprise. And especially like in the next issue, we have someone who's really known for their kind of quiet YA comics, who did this very cool, you know, messed up horror illustration that people are going to be surprised and delighted to see, I think.
What have been some of the biggest surprise contributors of all the people you can actually tell me about?
You know, we were both really excited to get an interview with Go Tanabe for the second issue. Go Tanabe is a manga creator who is best known here, I guess, and in Japan as well, for doing Lovecraft adaptations. And Lovecraft is famously hard to adapt in general and bring it to the manga form. I would say he is one of the only people who have successfully done Lovecraft in comics. And it's so hard to get in touch with Japanese creators in America, both from the language barrier and because the industries are so different. So when Zach Davison, who's a very prolific translator, brought that opportunity to us, James and I really flipped. We also have a piece from Josh Simmons in the second issue, and he's doing something for a future issue. And Josh is kind of, a lot of people know him from his weird sexual Batman comics that he's published online. But with stuff like The Furry Trap, he has been one of the biggest voices in very taboo, cutting-edge indie horror. So having him jump on board was great. And then people like, you know, Jen Bartel, you know, she's so busy, but she was very excited to do a piece. Becky Cloonan is doing something for a future issue. So some of them are people that James and I may know or know in passing, and we were just surprised because they were willing to make time in their schedule to do something for us.
I mean, that's one thing that I've found, is that people seem to be willing to do a fun little project. especially when they have the excuse of, I don't have to do the editing part of it.
Yeah, and it's really, I think that is also one of the side benefits of publishing this ourselves. It's not like we're going to these folks on behalf of a company saying, hey, we'd like to do this with publisher so-and-so. It's me and James asking and saying, like, yes, we are paying, but also, you know, we're not paying the rate that Marvel or DC can pay you, but are you passionate about horror? Would you like to do this? And the answer is yes, at a much higher percentage than I think he and I could have guessed.
So how did you and James get together in the first place for this?
Well, you know, James and I are local to each other. He's in Brooklyn and I'm in Queens. And one of the nice things about New York comics before the pandemic was the social scene was pretty welcoming and pretty mixed. So I've met a lot of cool people through other people. I don't know how I first met James. We have a couple different shared friends. So he and I are both very close with Steve Orlando. And he and I are good friends with Isaac Goodhart, who's the artist on a number of DC's YA projects. So Isaac and I go way back. We had our first published work through Top Cow at the same time. And I want to say I probably first met James through Isaac. And so last year when he was looking for an editor for Department of Truth, Steve Orlando recommended me. And James sent me Something is Killing the Children, which was about to come out. It hadn't hit shelves yet. And started talking to me about what I liked, what I didn't like, or whatever. And that was kind of my, like, audition to edit Department of Truth. So that's how I came on board with working more closely with James. But he and I have known each other casually for a couple years now. And although he's obviously a much more famous student of Scott Snyder's, I actually took a class with Scott years ago. So yeah, that's my messy answer of, like, we've kind of known each other for a long time, and now we work very closely and are in daily contact with each other.
I mean, it seems to be that same basic thing for a lot of people that I talk to, though. Just the random, I've kind of known them forever, and I can't pinpoint when exactly it was.
Yeah, and a lot of nice things come out of stuff like that. You know, I'm at this kind of middle ground in the comic industry, I think. Like, I have more stuff coming out next year that'll probably help establish my name a little bit more, but obviously I'm not on James's visibility level. But you have a lot of people who ask, like, how do I network? How do I this? How do I that? And 9 times out of 10, even though it's a frustrating answer, is you can't really go out with the goal of networking and the goal of trying to get things out of people. Like, Steve Orlando and I became friends because I interviewed him for Pace Magazine, but I didn't interview him with the thought of, I will befriend this man and I will work with him and get these opportunities. It just kind of evolved naturally. And a similar situation happened with James. But I also have an editing background. I worked at Random House for 5 years. I freelance edit for First Second. So it's not like it was just, who do I know who likes horror? It was, who do I know who has editing chops, who I will also want to talk to every single day, and who will I want to, like, hound me about deadlines and all these other things.
So it sounds like you two have a really nice complementing skill set going there.
Yeah, I mean, knock on wood, it's been a dream to work with James so far. He and I have a lot of the same interests and background. We're just a couple years apart in age, and our birthdays are actually a couple days apart. So it's nice to be able to pull up a shared database of things that influenced us growing up and point each other towards books and movies and comics and things that get the other person excited. And I think, you know, we don't have a hard age cap on Razor Blades, but one of the things that excites us is about getting this rising generation of comic creators to establish themselves and take the reins a bit more in comics. I just turned 31, so I'm not like a spring chicken, but I think you still see comics as kind of dominated by guys who have been doing this for 20, 30 years in some cases. And that's great. Longevity is a goal, but you also want new voices to have a real seat at the table so things don't get stagnant. And I think that's one of the reasons James and I work well together, is that we are in the same age cohort and we do have a lot of the same references and we do have a lot of the same ambition to kind of push comics forward in similar ways.
And then something just hit me. Tiny Onion comes from his last name, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
That seriously just hit me.
Yeah, not a lot of people clock that. Also, the name's pronounced Tynan. But obviously he gets Tinian and Tiny Onion, all these other variations pretty often. I mean, I get Foxy sometimes. People think that the E is out loud. But yeah, Tiny Onion comes from mispronunciations of James's last name.
So one of the things I really liked when I found out way too late about Razor Blades was that I could still go get myself a copy. You know, if I had found out a whole lot later, I still could have gone on to Gumroad and gotten a digital copy. But I was able to go order myself a physical one because the store whose name is escaping me that y'all are having send them out still had copies there.
Probably Jetpack Comics?
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah.
We will have a link down to them in the show notes if anybody wants to buy it, if there are any left. I hope that there aren't, but I also hope that there are because I want you guys to read it.
That's been one of the most challenging parts of figuring out Razor Blades. So when James and I first came up with Razor Blades, the idea was to do an all-digital anthology. I'm a completely digital reader. The only thing I read physically is prose and books that I can't get on my iPad. And for me, that's a matter of convenience. Like, I want to lay in bed, have something backlit. I want to take it with me on the subway without having to carry stuff around. And I live in a New York City apartment, so it just isn't sustainable for me to have long boxes upon long boxes. If you've ever seen a photo that James has tweeted of his loft, he has like wall-to-wall libraries, mostly of hardcovers. It's pretty insane. But the original goal for Razor Blades was all digital. And then, like I said, you know, James has this natural ambition, and he suggested doing a limited run of just the first issue, mainly because he wanted to hold a copy in his hands. And when we put that on sale, it sold out 500 copies in like 45 minutes. So there was a demand for that. And what we kept hearing, you know, some of that's of course speculators, but what we kept hearing was that there are a lot of readers who just want to read physically. They want to hold something in their hands. They don't like looking at a screen. They don't want to deal with all that. So we had to kind of pivot quickly to figure out a way to do print, because logistically that is so much more work for two of us to put together, plus my boyfriend who does the actual layout of the book. So the logo and the covers are designed by Dylan Todd, who works in Department of Truth, but my boyfriend is actually the one who puts together each issue in InDesign for free. It was so much more work to figure that out, and because James and I both live in New York, it's not necessarily a situation where we can just set an ambitious print run, and if we have extras, they sit around and we send them out as they sell. So we have been doing a like semi-limited run each issue, where you have a set amount of time to get a copy, and if you don't, unfortunately, you know, that's that. But like you said, we partnered with Jetpack Comics and Forbidden Planet UK, and also JJ's comic art. So there are a couple exclusive covers available, and those are still on sale, I think, at each of the retailers. So if you really want a print copy, there are still ways to do that. And then when issue 3 comes out, we'll again have this like 2-week window where if you want a print copy, you can buy it. But after that, we have to lock it because James and I can't afford the space or money to just keep printing on demand. And that's where the limitations of self-publishing do come in a little bit. But the flip side is we offer the digital version for whatever price people want to pay, which, you know, we could have set it at $5 or something and guaranteed a higher amount of money. But especially with having people come in from, they follow horror illustrators on Twitter, or they like horror prose but don't read a lot of comics, we wanted the barrier to entry to be as low as possible. So we have made a good amount of money through Gumroad. You know, people are choosing mostly to pay for it. But we also have a lot of people who do it for free, and we harbor no ill will toward them.
Well, you guys can automatically go take off one for each issue of the free people, because that was me. My physical ones haven't shown up yet.
Yeah, I think a lot of people double dip because they don't want to wait, but they want to have the physical version on their shelves. And it was especially difficult with issue 2, because we had the election changed mail situations quite a bit, Thanksgiving, Christmas. So they are shipping now, and we appreciate everyone's patience, but people are starting to receive them. And issues 3, 4, and 5 should go out a lot more quickly after the on-sale period ends.
So if I want to try to coerce my local shop into having me buy this through them, is that something y'all are set up to be able to do?
Yeah, so I named the shops that ordered exclusive covers earlier, but we've had a couple dozen shops reach out directly to James. And so he does his newsletter, Empire of the Tiny Onion, and I recommend anyone who's interested in razor blades subscribe to his newsletter. It's a really well-written rundown of thoughts on the industry in general, but it's also the most consistent place to get razor blades updates. The Twitter and Instagram is a little more on the fun side, but his newsletter is where you're going to find the ordering information for the most part. And yeah, shops can reach out. They can order directly from us. We have a retailer discount depending on volume. And we would love for more shops to carry it. And we're trying to make that as easy as possible for them. In the same way that Kickstarters usually have a retailer tier. The ones I mentioned earlier, though, they took the extra step of ordering with exclusive covers. So that's how you can get the Nick Robles cover, the Jim Bartel cover, and the Doug Monkey cover is through the retailers named before.
Well, I just know I like to have a physical issue because if I bring digital into the bathroom with me, I will sit there with my Kindle and read through way too many issues. And physical just gives me that limitation of this is the last page I have to leave.
Yeah, I feel you now. It's funny too. And so I've been like completely digital since 2015 now. And even with my own books, like when I got my first copy of Cheater Code, my Oni Press book, it was like, oh, that's cool. But it wasn't that like overwhelming, like, oh, this thing I've created is in my hands. Because I kind of get that rush when the PDF is finished.
Oh, you didn't sit there and wrap it in a blanket and rock it to sleep or anything?
So, yeah, just nurse it, swaddle it. No, I just tried to make sure I did bend it while I put it on my shelf.
Probably a good move.
My dog also really likes to eat books, so I have to make sure I don't leave any of mine laying out around her when I'm not supervising her, or I'll come back to the spine being all chewed up.
I'd say that's a really good reason. And I'll bet she's cute enough to where she gets away with it.
Oh yeah, completely. She gets a very light scolding, and it's more my problem that I left it in her reach.
Yeah, I've got 3 cats, so I know the pain. So what are y'all's big plans for razor blades going forward that you can actually tell me about?
Let me think about what I can actually tell you about. One of the things I'm very excited about is that we have a few contributors coming back. And that was a tough call because obviously James and I, we have people who contributed to the first 2 issues that we want to see more of. But at the same time, we have such a list of cool contributors that it feels like a hard call to make. So like Jenna Cha is coming back illustrating a story from someone who hasn't contributed yet. Trevor Henderson is in each issue. Brian Lovell, who's one of my favorite creators working today, he did single page pieces for the first 2 issues, and he has a longer continuation of that for the next issue that I think is really going to blow people away. So that's exciting to me to see people come back in other forms. I'm doing a serial that kicks off in the 3rd issue, and it's going to continue through issues 4 and 5. So that's exciting for me because in the first 2 issues, I have standalone stories. I love the short story format, but also seeing James do Killboy and seeing Alex Pecknadel and Jason Liu do Cinderside, I really wanted to do something that was going to cross over more than 1 issue and kind of use that anthology format in a different way. And then I'm also just really excited about a lot of the illustrators we got. One thing I would say is, like, we've had so many cool comic creators say yes. The fact that so many illustrators have said yes has really touched my cold, dark heart, because they don't know me and James from anybody. Like, you know, they're not necessarily in the comic scene. Saying that he writes Batman does not impress them, but they like the idea of razor blades and showcasing horror art alongside prose and short stories and short comics. So they say yes, and some of the illustrations we've got are just the most twisted, mind-blowing stuff. So I'm really excited about that. And along the prose front, we got I read a novel this year. One of my favorite things I read this year, I then reached out to the author and he's going to be doing a short. So that was a cool opportunity because he and I did not know each other before Razor Blades. But when I was packing the first issue, I saw that he ordered a copy. So even though he had no connection to me and James, he was one of the initial 500 people to get a copy of Razor Blades. And I seized that opportunity right away.
I mean, you have to when something like that jumps in your lap, though, right?
Yeah. And I, you know, he's tweeted about being a backer. We had other people, you know, going through that first address list and recognizing some of the names, people who are established in the comic industry, people who have reputations elsewhere. That was a really cool feeling because a number of those people have nothing to do with James, have nothing to do with me, but just like the idea of it and reached out. So seeing that come up when I was packing copies was very fun.
And I'm really glad that some of these ones that are going to have the continuing stories are going to still be here and I don't have to go find them somewhere else.
Yeah, but you know, actually one of the other things I'm excited about is some of the stories that have appeared in Razor Blade so far are sort of prologues to stories that the creators want to do elsewhere too. So that wasn't something we set out to necessarily demand out of Razor Blades, but Taboo, a lot of people remember it because it is where From Hell started. Alan Moore and Eddie Campbell serialized it in Taboo before they took and did it on their own and through Top Shelf and through other places. So we wanted to provide the possibility for creators to do that. And so there's a short in the first issue that I know is supposed to become something longer, and there's a short in the second issue that I know is supposed to become something longer. And there are a couple things coming up with that too. So that I think will be really fun. Obviously, James and I can't count for sure on that happening, but seeing things that kind of got their tryout or gestation period in Razor Blades grow into something larger, I think is going to be like a nice, proud parent for us.
Which really, I think, segues nicely into my other thought of, I really like that y'all are only taking the reprinting here rights and leaving all the creative rights and everything with the creators who sent it in.
Yeah, well, you know, James and I said from the beginning, like, we have no interest in capitalizing on this for anything else. Like, he and I are writers, and we are doing something that we want other writers and artists and illustrators and creators to be excited about. And if it was an IP farm, or if we were trying to exploit what they do in Razor Blades for our own profit, you know, no one wants to jump on board with that. This is a, you know, it's James and I created Razor Blades, but Razor Blades is everyone who's in the book. Like, it is Zach and Lonnie and Teeny and Danny and everybody else. So trying to hold on to anything more than the reprint rights just felt like a real misuse of the power of something like this.
And really, I feel like if you tried to do it, you might get 3 or 5 issues and then nobody would send anything ever again.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. I think we'd have like 30-page issues at most because a lot of people would rightly not want to sign over things before rates were able to pay. And I wouldn't blame them. I would not be as interested in a Razor Blades that looked like that. So we're providing this home. We're going to reprint it for as long as we can. But we hope that people, you know, they take these stories, they do other things with them, they print them in their own books, they do whatever they want with them after our little year of exclusivity.
Well, I'm really excited for that because some of these things, granted, I need to go back and read things more thoroughly because I was trying to make sure I caught everything in a couple hours, which, I mean, maybe one issue I should be able to rightfully get through with like half of it in a couple hours. But I'm really excited to see some of these things explode into something else.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a direct comparison, but something I always think of, one of my favorite movies is Hellraiser, and that's Clive Barker adapting and directing The Hellbound Heart, which is a story he also wrote. And I love The Hellbound Heart. It's a great version of that story, and there are some things you could argue are superior. But he wrote that, he had time to think about it, and then he brought it to the screen. And that's the version that has stood the test of time. And even bigger change, you know, Stephen King wrote The Stand, but before he wrote The Stand, he wrote a short story called Night Surf, which was kind of like a proof of concept for that whole story. And so seeing that evolve into something else, I think creators should have that opportunity. It's a disservice to the idea landscape if it's one shot and you're done. I mean, imagine if Spider-Man or the Hulk or Superman or Batman were frozen into whatever their first concept first was. You know, so many things change over the years and added over the years. So I think with Razor Blades, it'll be fun and exciting to see some of the creators involved take what they did for us and change, you know, a 4-page story into a 5-issue story or whatever else they can do with it.
And then I know Razor Blades just leaves you tons of time for anything else you possibly want to do. But if people want to see more from you specifically, what else do you have coming up in the near future?
Yeah, so along the same lines as Razor Blades, I did a short story with TKO called Night Train. And so that's TKO did their most recent wave of comics, but they also did a wave of short comics. I wrote that before Razor Blades existed, but it's very much a cousin of what I'm trying to do in Razor Blades. So if folks want to see more horror from me, they should definitely check that out. I also have 2 graphic novels coming out next year with Aftershock, which haven't been announced yet, but I co-wrote both of them with Steve Orlando, and one of them is a horror thriller, and one of them is YA that's a million miles away from horror. But the former will definitely interest people who know me from Razor Blades. And then a lot of the other projects that my career has been one of keeping my hand in a lot of different pots. Is that the saying? Did I get the saying wrong? My career has been
I understand what you mean, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, my career has been one of spinning many plates. So I have a number of things coming up that are exclusively for children. I have a couple things coming up that are exclusively for adults only. But on the horror front, I would say keep an eye out for an Aftershock announcement for me, pick up Night Train, and the serial that I'm kicking off in Razor Blades 3 I think will be fun for folks.
And a total tangent, and I know you don't work for Aftershock, but why are they trying to take all my money?
You know, my experience with Aftershock has been so positive, and I hopefully will have more coming up with them beyond those 2 graphic novels, but it's been great to see how they've grown over the years they've existed, because I think they are doing a great job now of picking rising talent and giving them and giving us an opportunity to kind of do different things and test out new ideas and new formats, because like I said, the 2 things I have coming out with them are original graphic novels, and then you have Zach and Lonnie and Sammy who are doing serialized short stories that have a similar theme but are changing volume. So I'm glad that they're trying different things out. I think what I want to see more of in 2021 and moving ahead is just more publishers being willing to experiment a little bit and not get stuck in the same, like, okay, this has to be a 5-issue miniseries or this has to be an ongoing series mold.
That'll be really nice if we can get people to pull it off.
Yeah, it's hard and there's so much resistance. Some of it valid, some of it purely rooted in fear of change. But I think something that Razor Blades proves is that not every story is meant to fit in an existing format. Sometimes the story you have is 8 pages. Sometimes the story you have is 200 pages that you need to read straight through. So I think we do a disservice to the medium of comics when we try to fit everything in a monthly floppy format. And someone asked me about my more adult book, Cheater Code, you know, why do it as an OGN versus a miniseries? And, you know, you don't have a guarantee with a miniseries. I might not have gone to tell the whole story I wanted to tell. So I think the chance to experiment, the chance to try different formats, to do shorts, to do longer things, to stand on their own, that can only benefit the medium creatively.
And then I fully expect to talk to you about at least one of those upcoming graphic novels later. You know, we kind of talked about it a little bit when we're planning this. Yeah, that's definitely going to happen.
That is the one flip side to doing graphic novels is you end up working on something for a long time before people even know it exists. Because a lot of series, you know, you're making them as they come out. But these graphic novels, Steve and I wrote finished writing our parts of them pretty early in 2020, but it's going to be a couple months into 2021 before the public even knows what they are.
So if people want to see more from you around the internet, where else can they find you?
I am Steve_Fox, F-O-X-E, on Twitter and Instagram. Instagram's mostly going to be dog pictures, though. And then you can also find me at stevefox.com. I keep a pretty updated bibliography of everything I work on, from children's books on through the creepy adult stuff.
And as always, we'll have links to that stuff down in the show notes, because it's so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things.
Yes, especially the old English spellings.
Oh, they're fun, though.
It's a little fancier, right?
You have to buy an extra letter when you go get things engraved, but it's worth it. As always, you can head on over to Twitter and find me over at Play Comics Cast, or head over to playcomics.com, where you can catch comic reviews coming out. I'm trying to get more people to write those for the wonderful free price, because I'm not getting paid either. Some people are doing it. Who knows? And, I mean, normally I'd say go, you can support me on Patreon, but really, go buy some of Steve's stuff, because it's good work. You'll enjoy it. Find a copy of Razor Blades. You know, pay for the digital one, because it's worth it.
Split the difference. You know, pay me, pay you, spread the money around. We all just got some holiday cash, probably.
I mean, I can guarantee you that any money people give me, I'm just going to go spend on comics anyway. If you want to hear other wonderfully geeky shows, though, you can head on over to GunnaGeek.com. Check out all the wonderfully geeky shows they've got going on over there. And if you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to SoundCloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, find yourself something cute and fuzzy that you can pet. Because cute, fuzzy things are always fun to pet. Like Steve's dog. Holy crap, how do you get anything done with that face?
It's pretty difficult.
Really? I don't know how you get anything done. We're also going to squeeze a picture of Steve's dog in here that I'm going to blatantly steal and get the site taken down for copyright infringement. But, you know, go find something that you love and find yourself a new favorite character.
Like my dog.
Thank you. I was waiting. And this is the one you have on the website, right? That just the blurb that it's going to exist. Yeah.
Yes.
That you're coming back for that.
Yeah. A gay horror thriller. It's very brutal. And I'm very excited about it.
We'll rope Steve into it too. We'll make it a party.
I don't know if people can handle both Steves at the same time, but we'll do our best.
I have done an episode with three Chrises at the same time.
Steve and I, you know, we really give each other a hard time. He's one of my closest friends in general, not just in comics. So I think that any interview that happens with the both of us is going to be 90% us shitting on each other and then 10% us talking about the book.
I mean, to me, that just sounds like a good episode.
That's what podcasts are made for.
I know, right?